Why do people have no peace? Why do people have no peace?
Because they don't believe.
They don't believe.
Truly in God.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They don't believe in God.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe believe in God, but with whole heart.
Okay.
Maybe
yeah.
By believing God. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But when we faced with the problem.
Yeah.
I lost some hope in God. In God, mm-hmm. And maybe. If we completely believe in God, maybe we have peace.
Okay. So they don't completely believe in God. Okay. Any other answers anyone wants to give?
Because we think we're in charge.
We think we're in charge.
We have to fix it, the problems.
Okay.
And we can't.
Okay. Where do people look for peace? Okay.
Situation.
Security, finances.
Power.
Mm-hmm.
Drugs, alcohol.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Relationships.
Yeah.
Anything but God.
Yeah. Anything but God.
I mean, okay. If they're not refining in God, it's
anything. Yeah. Okay. 1 Timothy 6, verses 3 through 10. Just going to read them. Teach and urge these things. If anyone teaches a different doctrine and does not agree with the sound words of our Lord Jesus Christ and the teaching that accords with godliness, he is puffed up with conceit and understands nothing. He has an unhealthy craving for controversy and for quarrels about words, which produce envy, dissension, slander, evil suspicions, and constant friction among people who are depraved in mind and deprived of the truth, imagining that godliness is a means of gain. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. Okay, so last week we focused on verses 3 through 5. And they talked about teaching and believing right doctrine. And they say if you don't believe Jesus, you have some heart problems. And it talks about like what of those heart problems are. And then at the end of verse 5, one of those problems is that you see godliness as a means for gain. Now, there are kind of two different ways that, two different kinds of people that could refer to. One is the person who is maybe not a Christian probably at all, very cynical, and thinks that all those Christians, all those religious people, they just want money. And you've kind of seen people who are that way. They look at anything religious as they're just trying to get money from you. It's kind of a crazy idea when you think of it. It's not that there aren't people who do that. There are people who use religion for money, for sure. But if you actually were to look at, let's say, the average salary of most pastors and compare it to the average salary of somebody else who's in a similar position, a professional position, Being a pastor is not the way you're going to gain money, generally speaking. That's the first person. Those are the cynical people who just see through everything. As C.S. Lewis put it, when you see through everything, you see nothing. And that is true. The second type of person this could be referring to are those pastors I was talking about. See, there are people who really do see godliness as a means for gain. They pastor in order to get money. And they're the people who teach that if you give to them, God will bless you with riches of your own. And if you order this holy towel for $10.99, it's that kind of stuff. And that's not Christianity. Now, they use Christianity. They talk about Jesus. They talk about the Bible. And then they sell you their holy towels for $10.99. And, yeah, or more.
Or their book.
Yeah, or whatever it is. And so that's not Christianity. We've also already talked in the past about some of the name it, claim it kind of theology, prosperity. We've talked about that. That's not Christianity. What that is godliness as a means for gain. See, in those theologies, godliness is not the main thing. Money is. And your prayers are a way for you to get what you want. That's all your prayers are for. It's not to honor God. It's for you to get what you want. What do you want? You want a vacation home? You want $1 million to retire on? Just ask God. He'll give it to you. He said, ask and you'll receive, right? Guys, that's not Christianity. But you've seen all that. You've seen that kind of thing. That is godliness, using it as a means for gain. Now, people have been using religion to get money as long as religion has been around. This isn't a modern day thing only. In fact, Paul's referring to it in this verse right now. He's aware of this kind of thing. People using religion to get money. He's aware of it. He's talking about it in verse 5. Now that statement in verse 5, godliness is a means for gain, sets him off on a new discussion. This is how Paul does this a lot. We've talked about this. He'll say a word that reminds him of this, which is the same word, and he just starts talking, and that's what's going to happen. And so we're really going to focus on verses 6 through 10 today, but verse 5 is what sets him off on verses 6 through 10. So I want you in your Bibles to look at verses 5 and 6 right now. I'm just going to give you a second to look at those two verses. And what you should see is at the very end of verse 5, godliness is a means for gain. And then at the beginning of verse 6, godliness with contentment is great gain. And you should see Paul, in Paul's mind, those are connected. There's a sense there. You should see it. But it's a contrast. It begins with but. And so it's the same idea flipped on its head, so to speak. And so verse 5 is a criticism of how people think or use the faith. Verse 6 is a positive statement of real faith. In verse 5, gain is money. In verse 6, gain is not money. See, real godliness with real contentment is greater than all the money in the world. So here's what we've got now in verses 6 through 10. I want you to just sort of look at those verses. You just looked at verse 6, and so kind of look at verses 6 through 10 and I'm going to ask you a question in just a second about those verses. Give you a chance to look at them. Okay, so with the rest of our time, we're really going to talk about two big ideas. And I want you to tell me what you think those two big ideas are in verses 6 through 10.
Riches.
Okay, riches. We're going to be talking about riches.
And contentment.
Okay, so look at now verses 6 through 8. I'm just going to read them. Godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. He is talking there about contentment. He says it twice. Godliness with contentment, and if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. And the verse in between is why? We brought nothing into the world. We can't take anything out of the world. We're going to be content with what we have. Okay, so we're going to talk about contentment. That's the positive side of what we're going to be talking about. Verse 9 begins with what word?
But.
Okay, so we're going to talk about contentment, and then but, and here's what he says. Verse 9. Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. Okay. Verse 9. The desire to be rich. Verse 10. The love of money. The same thing. The desire to be rich in the world. He's just different ways of saying the same thing. Okay, so just kind of put verses 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 in your heads together with but in between them. And we've got contentment, but if you love money, this is what happens. You see that in the text, right? Guys, the love of money and contentment never go together. People who are content don't desire to be rich. I don't mean they're not ever tempted. I mean, the love of money is a temptation that everybody faces. I'm not trying to say no one ever faces it. But I am saying that when you really are content, why do you need riches? You're content. And people who want to be rich are never content. You've seen this. You've seen people who are this way. I have lots of people that I know who are this way. You have lots of people that you know who are this way. Because it's a universal temptation. This is the love of money is one of these things that is not unique to America. It's in China, it's in Iran, it's in Indonesia, it's in the Karini people, it's everywhere. You know, there may be cultures that foster it in certain ways more. Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but it exists everywhere. Okay, so contentment then we're going to talk about first. So verses 6 through 8, we're going to talk those verses first, contentment. And I'm going to begin by simply saying this. Contentment is in Jesus. Here's what Jesus said. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives. Those are Jesus' own words. He gives you peace. Jesus' words. Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give rest to your souls. I was reading Psalm 4 yesterday, and Psalm 4 concludes this way. It says, the last verse in Psalm 4, it says, I will lie down and sleep in peace, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. I sleep in peace. Why? Because the Lord is the one making him dwell in safety. He's trusting in the Lord. Yesterday at dinner, we read Psalm 131. It's, my heart is not proud, O Lord. My eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with great matters or things too wonderful for me, for I have stilled and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child is my soul within me. O Israel, put your hope in the Lord, both now and forevermore. And so he's a weaned, think of that. Think of a weaned child with its mother. That's contentment. That is a great picture of contentment. And what's that come from? Oh, Israel, put your hope in the Lord, both now and forevermore. It's this contentment is tied to the Lord. You can't have it without the Lord. It's what you were saying earlier. You know, why do people have no peace? They don't really believe God. They don't follow God. Real peace is in Jesus, and it isn't anywhere else. And that's something we need to be reminded of, because we want to look for peace in other places than where it really is. We need to be reminded of that. You and I, we were made for Jesus. We were made to know him. We were made to love him. We were made to be his. This is why in 1 Timothy, where we are, godliness with contentment. This is why godliness is part of that. You can't have contentment without the godliness part. That's necessary for real contentment. Because you were made for God. That's why you need God to be truly content. It's what you were made for. If you were made for God and you don't have God, then you're not living for what you were made for. That's a problem. You will not be content because it's not what you're made for. Earth can never make you content, ever. It offers all the wrong things. Now, I probably should say that Earth offers its own kind of peace and its own kind of security and its own kind of contentment, if we want to use that word, but it's not the real thing. It's a counterfeit. It's not deep. It's shallow. It doesn't last. When the sun is shining, you're content with Earth. But when the storm comes, all of a sudden, you're not so content with Earth. Earth is a fair weather contentment, earthly contentment, is fair weather contentment. But it's not content when you have cancer, or when you lose your job, or when, you know, fill in the blank. It offers all the wrong things. See, the soul, your soul was made for God. Earth is not God. God is bread and meat for the soul. It's what you were made to feed on. Earth is like wet paper for your soul. You can eat it, but it ain't going to do much for you. You feed on earth, your soul dies. And dying souls are not content. They don't thrive. But you feed on God, it's, yes. This is what my soul needs when you feed on God. Jesus satisfies. He just does. He gives you what your soul desires. In Jesus, you have what you were made for. And when you have what you are made for, you're content with what you have. That's the idea in verses 7 and 8 of 1 Timothy 6. Here's verse 7. Verse 6, godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world. We cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. We brought nothing into the world. We can take nothing out of the world. So when you came into the world, you did not come into the world with diamonds and pearls. You were not born with a ring on your finger. And when you leave this earth, you aren't going to need a fat bank account when you die. Where you're going after you die, they don't do business that way there. Your cash is worthless when you die. And they don't accept credit cards there either. In heaven or hell, it doesn't matter who we're talking about. In heaven, credit cards make no difference. In hell, they make no difference there either. And so it makes no difference where you're going. What you have now is worthless. And it is worthless into eternity, forever. I want that to sink in for a moment. We have this way of, because we're living on earth right now and this is where we are, we have this way of thinking that this is what matters, and this and our life here, you know, we're here for 80 years or whatever it is, you know. David said 70 or 80. Maybe it's 80 or 85 76. Now or whatever. What's for that?
Men. 76 for men, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Whatever. We think that's a long time. Guys, we use money here on earth for a blip of a nanosecond compared to eternity. And then it's all gone forever and ever and ever and ever. Now, when money is your focus, you are focusing on something that you can hold on to for 1 second, and then it's gone forever. That's what you're doing. That is foolishness when you think about it. That is foolishness. When Jesus is your focus, you are focusing on something that brings peace forever and ever. And ever. And you think of the trade that people make. They say, no, I don't want Jesus. I want this nice paying job. This is more important to me than Jesus is. And you think of from the perspective of eternity, how foolish that is. That is foolish. When you have Jesus, you view money and stuff differently. Verse 8. If we have food and clothing, with these we'll be content. In Jesus, you're content with what you have. Now, when Paul's talking food and clothing here, really the idea is your basic needs. That's what he's basically saying. You have basic needs, right? You'll be content with your basic needs. You need food, okay. You need some clothes to wear. Okay, do you need $200 designer jeans? Or do you just need clothes to wear? You'll be content with clothes. You don't have to have the $400 dress or whatever it is. You need a place to live. Okay, you need a place to live. You don't need a big mansion. What's that?
It doesn't say that, though.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't promise a place to live.
He doesn't mention that. But I think his idea is basic needs. And that is a basic need. You need a place to live. You don't need a big mansion. You don't need like a four-bedroom, you know, big, or you don't need two homes, a vacation home. And I'm not criticizing people who have those. What I am saying is you don't need those. And you have to, in your heart, let go of that kind of stuff. Contentment, here's what contentment does. Contentment breeds simplicity. Because when you're content, you don't need any of this other stuff. You really don't need it. You're content. That's what contentment is. And so you don't need all that stuff. People who are contented tend to live simpler lives. That's a general statement. As a general statement, that's true. They tend to live simpler lives. So, let me summarize. I told you we're going to talk two big ideas, contentment and love of money. So we're on the contentment part. Let me just summarize about biblical contentment. One, contentment is in Jesus. Two, it involves godliness. Three, contentment is happy with what you have. That's basically kind of a summary of what we've been talking about. Now, in this text, the desire to be rich and the love of money are contrasted. We've talked about that already. And so let's talk about some of those, the last part. And let me ask a question. We're going to be talking about the desire to be rich, the love of money. When people desire to be rich, what are they really seeking?
Security.
Value.
Power. Personal okay. value.
Okay.
Especially in this culture.
Okay. Earlier, when I asked about peace, you know, what are people seeking? You said security. When people desire to be rich, you know what they want? They want contentment.
They think that it will give them value. And
that's right. They think the power, when they have that power, they'll be content. They think that when they have that security, they'll be content. People who want to be rich want to be content. That's what they want.
But they're doing it on things that could be gone tomorrow.
Yes, that's right. And this is the whole irony of the whole thing. People desire more money because they think, if only I had more money, then I would be secure. If only I had more money, then I would be content. I would be content if I had this. If I had more money, I could have the house that would make me happy. If I had more money, I would have the car that would make me happy. So, then when people pursue money, they are making themselves discontented in the pursuit of contentment. They're chasing something that they'll never get because they're chasing it in the wrong place.
Because contentment and peace,
yes,
inside of us.
That's right. Peace
not
inside
out
you.
Of us.
That's right.
If we feel a peace,
yes,
or satisfy of everything we have, give us the peace and contentment for everything we have.
Yes.
We seek insight. And
yeah,
if we have faith in God,
yeah,
we can get it from this
contentment.
Yes.
Yes.
But when
you get it from God.
We want to search out of in the world. Never we have contentment.
That's right.
Peace.
It will never come that way.
Because maybe, excuse me, maybe someone else have more money than me, and mention,
yes,
everything. Because of that, I have never satisfied for you have. I have.
Yes. That's a good way of putting it. Yes. You've got Paul here. You're understanding him.
Hebrews
go ahead.
13:5 says, keep your love free, life free from the love of money, and be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you.
Yeah.
So we can
praise
confidently
the Lord.
Say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me?
Yeah. Where was that again?
Hebrews 13:5.
Hebrews 13:5.
Because
that's a great text for this.
Because okay, if we are relying on our money to give us the safety that we want, well, money is truly just a made-up concept. And tomorrow, a war could stop and U.S. money could be worth nothing. And your bank or you know, something happens and your bank walks away with it and you have nothing. So this is, but God promises he will always be there, even if the whole world falls apart.
Yeah.
He's still there.
That's why you're content in him.
Yeah, because he will give you the food, and that way you don't have to freak out and say, you're going to steal my money and I need to do something evil to you,
yeah,
to keep you.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. So, you know that old Beatles song, Money Can't Buy Me Love?
I know it.
You know it? Can you sing it? She's got it. She's singing it for us. Okay, it can't buy you contentment either. There are lots of things money can't buy. And the things that money can't buy tend to be the best things. This text says that the desire for riches will buy you something. Here's what it'll buy you. Verse 9. Temptation, a snare, senseless and harmful desires, ruin and destruction. Money will buy you that. Verse 10, here's what it'll buy you. Other evils, wandering away from the faith, many pains. If you chase money, you're going to have a lot of pain. You're going to wander away from the faith. You're going to struggle with a whole lot of other evils too, because money, the love of money produces other kinds of evil. You're going to have snares, desires for all kinds of things, ruin, destruction. Money can't buy you love, but it can buy you that stuff. Jesus said this, no man can pursue two masters, for either he will love the one and hate the other, or he will love the other and hate the one. You cannot serve God and money. That's how Jesus put it. It's that stark with Jesus. If you're going to pursue money, you're not going to pursue God. You can't do both. The love of money takes you away from God. That's why it is a trap. That's why, verse 9, it ruins you. That's why, verse 10, it produces other evils. That's why, verse 10, it brings all kinds of pain in the end, because it takes you away from the one that you were made for, is what it does. It takes you from Jesus.
And when you are greedy about money, it comes for us pain.
Yes. It does. It brings pain.
That's why you can't sleep at night, because you're afraid somebody's going to take your stuff.
Yes.
Yep. Keep your hands off of my stack, you know. And maybe God wants you to give some of your stack to the poor person, and you're not willing to do that.
Yes.
And there's great joy in being able to do things like that.
Yes. I've shared this before, but the best antidote to greed is giving. There is no better way to fight greed in your heart than to give. And it's one of the reasons why giving is something, I'm off script right now, but this is one of the reasons why giving is something that the scriptures talk about for God's people to be doing. It's not just that, you know, the church needs money for godliness as a means for gain. Some people see that, you know. We talked about that in verse 6. It's that your heart needs it. You need to give for your own heart. And so it's important. Okay. So back on to the love of money. America has a way of making people discontent, because America has a lot of riches.
We worship money.
We do. Well, other cultures worship money too.
Well, I know, but we're really good at it.
Well, we're...
They'll make excuses for us.
I'm not trying to make excuses. What I'm trying to do is say America can deliver the goods in a way that other countries and other cultures can't. People come to America to have a better life. And with what they mean, when you talk to them, what do you mean by a better life? Do you know what they mean? That's right. Higher paying job, more money, better health care, a nicer house, a nicer car. This is why people come to America. And here's the thing. America can give those things. It really, the economy here is capable of actually giving those things to people. And so it tempts you to pursue all of those externals. And so America's very rich on externals, but very poor inside. That's America. You've come to America. Welcome to America. This is my country. I've been here. I know it really well. because America can offer all of these riches, it's tempting to come here and fall in love with all of those riches and to live for all of those riches. And when you do, you miss God. You have no peace. You are in a trap that will eat your soul. In the midst of all of the good things of America, and I'm American, there really are good aspects to America. But in the midst of all the good things of America, do you see that danger? America will not bring you peace. It will not. It can trap your soul in the pursuit of riches. Jesus said, "What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul?" See, here in America, as in your countries, you can lose your soul fast. You know, different countries have different ways of losing your soul. Actually, all countries probably have some of the similar ways, but they're emphasized more in one place and less in others. But you can lose your soul fast. And America can encourage you to pursue the riches that will destroy your soul. Because America can deliver the goods. And most people who come here do live a richer lifestyle than they were living in the place they came from. That's true of most people who come here. And that's the trap. That's sort of, I don't know, maybe it's the bait, so to speak. But don't trade away your soul so you can have a nice house. That's a really bad trade. That's a really, really bad trade, guys. Because you lose your soul, you lose everything.
And your house might burn down.
Your house will one day be gone.
It's going to go, yeah.
Now, this can be a difficult sell to people. Because money and riches are right here, right now. We see them. They're in front of us. Because with money and riches, you can buy a lot of nice things that you can see and you can enjoy them. And actually, biblically, you can enjoy them. There's nothing wrong with the nice things, biblically. But godly contentment, that's not something you can buy. It's not something you see and touch. The house is. Contentment is not. So, should I pursue something I see right here, right now? Or should I pursue what I can't exactly see? That's why it can be such a difficult sell. And sometimes people have to have a taste of riches to be discontented with them and see it. I've seen many people that are this way. They've had a taste of riches and they said, "Oh, that doesn't." And they realize that doesn't work. Example: F. Scott Fitzgerald is a good example of this. F. Scott Fitzgerald was a writer, American author, 20th century. He wanted riches, and he got to taste them. And when he did, he saw how empty they were. Now, he never escaped from his desire. Sometimes, just because you see how empty it is, doesn't mean you still don't want it. But he saw the emptiness, and he then wrote The Great Gatsby. And you guys may not have read the book, but in that book, you see overwhelming riches, opulent riches. And you see how empty the whole thing is. You see mansions, cars, parties, and you see pain and arrogance and the sin and the loneliness and the sheer emptiness of all of it. You see it all. It's a good American novel. If you haven't read it, you could read it. Actually, they've made a movie out of it if you want to take the short route. Yeah, multiple movies. It's all pretty on the outside. And that's about it. It's just pretty on the outside. Guys, I want you to see that about riches. I want you to see, yeah, they really are pretty. But I want you to be realistic about how deep that prettiness goes. If you don't see the emptiness of riches and things I'm so sorry for you. Because you're never going to be content. If you do see it, then the way to peace and the way to contentment is with Jesus. That's where you got to go. The seeing the emptiness of riches should then drive you to Jesus. Now here's the thing. You can't fight the love of money by fighting the love of money. You can't say, oh, I'm just not going to love money. I'm not going to go down. I don't want riches. I don't want... No. That doesn't work because you aren't that strong. You fight the love of money by loving something else. Even more. By loving Jesus. And so when Jesus is your greatest love, what that means is money is not. Jesus is. And I want to encourage you, if you sense, you know, a struggle, this is something I struggle with. And we all do, to some extent. And so this isn't, you know, I'm preaching to me just as much as I'm preaching to you guys. But if you sense that desire, that struggle, please don't think you're going to overcome it yourself by being strong. You need Jesus. Run to Him. Pursue Him every day. Learn to fall in love with Him over and over again. And as you draw near to Him, He will give you His love. And He will give you His peace. And He will give you His character. And when that happens, you'll be content. Now, I'd like to do this. We've been talking about contentment and the love of money, which Paul puts together and as sort of opposites. And I've told you that to fight the love of money and to be content requires that you walk with Jesus. Requires it. It's not negotiable. That's where you got to go. That's the focus. So I want you to think of one practical step you can take in your life that will help you draw near to Jesus. I want the focus to be there, not on I'm going to fight love and money. I want it to be on how am I going to walk with Jesus? How am I going to know Him better? One practical step you can take, and maybe it's something like, I just want the desire. Give me the desire, Lord. Okay, but maybe that's your step. Start praying for that. Maybe it deals with getting in His Word every day. Start reading the Bible every day. If you want to love Him, you need to know what He says. Maybe it's meeting weekly with a godly man or a godly woman. That's going to help you walk with Jesus. Maybe it's finding a place to serve, sharing your faith, giving. We talked a little bit about that. That's a way to fight loving money. Whatever it is, I'm just going to give you a moment to think about that, and we're going to pray in just a moment.